Video of the border agents taking water that you and others had put in the harsh Sonoran Desert, gallons and gallons of water, and dumping that water. So back then, Scott's arrested right after the video comes out of the border agents dumping the water. Now the Office of Inspector General within the DHS releases all these horrific photos of the scandalous conditions inside the migrant jails. And the federal prosecutors come out and try to make Scott Warren the story again, say, if you dare try to deal with this, this is what we're going to do to you, Catherine.
That's right. And, you know, it really is no surprise or secret that Border Patrol conditions are inhumane and abusive. As early as 2011, NOMARDESK put out a report, Culture of Cruelty, that documented overcrowding, denial of medical treatment, denial of food and water to migrants being held in Border Patrol custody. So it's really no surprise, and this is an agency that has shown that culture of cruelty and abusive practices, not only under the Trump administration, but really for decades now. And, you know, Scott lives in Ajo, lives in the same desert where actually the day after his trial ended, the Gurupreet Kaur was found, the six-year-old girl from India, to have died from heat exposure while her mother went out in search of water. So he, along with not only other humanitarian aid volunteers, but border residents, are responding to a crisis in their backyards. And Scott did what anyone else would do when asked for help by two people in distress, which was he gave them food and water, he made sure they had medical care, and he didn't ask for their documentation before doing that.
Catherine Gaffney, we want to thank you so much for being with us, longtime activist and volunteer with No More Deaths. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking July 4th in Chicago at the Hyatt Regency McCormick Place at 7:30. Check our website at democracynow.org. That's July 4th. And on Thursday, our special with Ta-Nehisi Coates, our special with Noam Chomsky. On Friday on Democracy Now!, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you were listening to KBOO Portland.
Meet me on the mountain.
KBOO wants you to meet us where the music's at.
You can see awesome live bands like Fruition.
That's right. KBOO wants to send you to a concert this summer.
Just enter the KBOO Summer Music Raffle, where three lucky winners will choose in order from three awesome events.
You could win 2 3-day passes to the Northwest String Summit, July 19th to the 21st.
A pair of Sunday tickets to Pickathon, August 4th.
A pair of tickets to Lord Huron and Shaky Graves at the Oregon Zoo, August 12th.
Tickets are just $5, and if you buy four, you get an extra raffle chance for free.
Enter at kboo.fm/give, or you can buy tickets in person at Music Millennium or Grendel's Coffee.
Deadline to enter is July 7th. See kboo.fm/summermusicraffle for full rules and details.
Enter now for your chance to win.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Storytime with Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. Tanya Lippert is releasing the book Goodbye School, where the main character Franny is preparing to move to a new school and saying goodbye to the old school. Again, that's a Storytime and Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's a couple minutes past 5, and coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, organizers at the new Jason Barnes Landing Houseless Community are inviting people to come down and meet them. Today is day 8.
Straight Pride marchers say they have been terrorized by glitter.
And in international news, Black Lives Matter protests in Israel have grown so big that the parents of a slain teen at the heart of the movement are calling for a pause.
Yeah. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Leslie McLam. A resolution, SJR 18, passed by Oregon lawmakers this session will refer a constitutional amendment allowing caps on campaign contributions to voters in 2020. Oregon is one of five states without a dollar limit for contributions to candidates. Eric Takedoff, the Oregon News Service, has more.
Oregon voters will have a chance to weigh in on the role of money in politics next year. Among the flurry of legislation passed at the end of this year's session is a resolution to put a constitutional amendment on the 2020 ballot, allowing the state to cap campaign contributions. Oregon is one of five states that has no limits for how much money corporations or individuals can contribute to a political candidate. Attorney Jason Kafori, a member of the group Honest Elections Oregon, says the legislation is historic. He notes that Oregon legislative races are the second most expensive in the nation.
Putting good limits in place and disclosing who's giving the big money on the independent expenditures will give us a much healthier democracy and, I hope, lead to citizens having more of a voice and not just big corporate and big money interests.
Another measure that would have specified donation limits failed this session. Advocates for changes to campaign contributions said the limit was too high and there were too many loopholes in the bill. After Republicans walked out last month over cap and trade legislation, Oregonian reporter Rob Davis calculated contributions back to 2009 from companies that would have been affected by the bill. He found Senate Republicans received more than $117,000, while Senate Democrats received a little more than $43,000, nearly a 3-to-1 ratio. Kafori believes that's the real reason senators walked out, and what pushed legislators to pass this bill.
The Republicans left twice, once for a tax increase and once to try to kill this climate bill. Republicans weren't leaving the state because of moral issues like abortion or guns. They were leaving because these issues hit right at their big donors' interests.
Republican senators deny this, saying Democrats are just trying to spin their failure to pass cap-and-trade legislation. They say the walkout was necessary to defend the economic interest of their rural constituents. The contribution cap resolution also had support from a handful of Republican lawmakers in both House and Senate. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Campers at the new Jason Barnes Landing houseless community are waiting for their site to be cleared by law enforcement, but they're not stopping their efforts. Organizers Mimi Gurman and Chief spoke with KBOO News today about the man who inspired the camp and the current situation for this 8-day-old houseless community in North Portland. The group is inviting people to come out, meet them, and bring water in large containers as well as propane. The community is located at the far end of Peninsula Crossing Bike Trail, right before Columbia Boulevard.
Jason Barnes was a friend of ours who was living on the streets in St. John. I met Jason 2.5 years ago in the winter when I was delivering dry socks and pants and sleeping bags and tents and things like that no one else in the city is willing to do for our folks outside. So there were very few of us in St. John's who connect that way with the unhoused community. And I met Jason, and he was freezing, and I asked him if he needed some dry clothes, and that's how I met him. I met him at Safeway, where the bottle return is. And he was a small man, and quiet, and kind, and beautiful. And he just said very quietly, yes, I could use some socks. And he showed me his feet, which were in plastic bags in the freezing, freezing cold weather. It was in the 20s. And his pants were wet, and he had no coat. So we got him, you know, he got dry clothes, got everything. And we became instant friends from that moment on. And I started to learn, when I couldn't find him, that his community, his friends, and his extended family on the street loved him so much. And when I couldn't find him, I would get worried and make sure that he was okay by asking his friends, because everybody always needed to know where Jason was because he was so vulnerable out here. One day, he said to me, the streets are going to kill me. He said that very, very clearly, and he was crying. And he said, I want to have a village the same way that there are other villages around Portland. We need a place that's safe. And he said, please make that happen. He wasn't asking me to make it happen. He told me to make it happen. And I asked him at that point if he wanted to also speak with anybody from the city, just to have his voice heard. We laughed about the fact that we both understood the city probably wouldn't help, but he said, yeah, he wanted to. So I arranged a meeting between Jason and the mayor.
Which mayor was that?
Mayor Wheeler. And I couldn't find Jason for a week through the time, before the meeting and through the meeting. I couldn't find him anywhere, because that's what happens on the street. You can't find people when you want to find them, you know? And so a friend, another advocate, came with me to that meeting, and we went for Jason, and we told the mayor, this is the problem. You can't get services to people out here if you can't find them. I can't even find Jason, who wants to come and speak to you, in order to get him here to speak to you. And we had a long talk. The mayor lied to us at that meeting. He told us that he was going to help us get land, that his office was actually looking at land in St. John's for us. And we said, okay, well, that sounds positive. And it turned out that the land he was talking about was land that was owned by a church in St. John's that was a backdoor deal to bring Hazelnut Grove from their spot over to St. John's to this church land, so that they could lease the land to the church so that the church could make money off of homeless people. And then the mayor wouldn't have to deal with the not-in-my-backyarders of Overlook, who kept harassing him about getting rid of Hazelnut Grove. So that's what he was really telling us in the Jason Barnes meeting. In the meantime, Jason Barnes got hit and killed by a drunk driver on November 15th in St. John's on Willamette Boulevard when he was collecting cans on recycling night. And the tragedy of that, the depth of pain that everybody here feels, I can't even express how deep that is.
What is going on? How many days have you been there?
We set the camp up, today's day 8. We set the camp up last Tuesday night, and so Wednesday was our first day. We got toilets delivered on that day as well. And the following day, so day 2, Nick Fish's office decided that we weren't allowed to have toilets. These were toilets that were delivered and prepaid for a year, for 2 toilets to be cleaned every week. And so that was our first surprise, was Nick Fish saying that about the toilets. The toilets had to go. In the meantime, we had platforms brought in. The folks at Jason Barnes picked them up, moved them in. We got all the tents set up. We got a shower tent that's not quite finished yet. We have a kitchen set up. Instead of the good toilets that he had removed, we have a compost toilet, but we would really like those 2 toilets back because they're much easier to use. So today's day 8, and from my perspective as an advocate, everybody's doing great. We're working things out, figuring things out. The camp is clean. We have Metro picking up trash for us in Metro bags, which is fairly new to the city, and that's been terrific. We still need some volunteers helping out with bringing food and water to us so that we have more of an ongoing back and forth that way with the community. And there's also been, Lisa, a lot of support from the community that is around Jason Barnes, which has been great. One of the things I'd like to say before Chief takes over here is that Jason Barnes' mother contacted us, and we had a long talk, and it was incredible to speak with the mother of such a dear friend of all of ours, mine included, and the people at the Jason Barnes Landing. She had a lot of questions about what happened to her son when he was killed the night of November 15th in St. John's while he was canning. And now we are in touch. She has written a letter to Ted Wheeler and Nick Fish, not just regarding the toilet takeover by Nick Fish, but the behaviors of the city against unhoused people. So, you know, we are receiving support, and that's been fabulous. I'd like to let folks know, too, that if they want to come around in support, we are located at the end of the Peninsula Trail, the north end. It's at Columbia Boulevard. So if you look up the Peninsula Trail online, we are at the far end on the west side of the Peninsula Trail, right at Columbia Boulevard.
Okay. Let's get Chief on the line, see what he has to say.
Well, Jason, he was a, like I say, he was a little small man, and people were, all these people that loved him, he was crying and pleading with us for it. And as older people, we dropped the ball here. We really should have done this a long time ago. Since he's passed away, we've lost four other people in this community here. Overdoses, we had two overdoses here. So it's really tragic. We could have helped these people. We could have stopped this. And older people, I feel like we dropped the ball. We should have been on this a long time ago. And Ted Wheeler, I don't know where he's at, and he really got to be a special kind of person to displace folks and not, with all the resources he has, and not provide for them. He's supposed to be in charge of the city here. I don't see it. I don't see what he's doing.
Chief, for people listening right now, what should people be bringing to you over there?
Well, food is good. Water, we need a lot of water and fuel. We need some fuel, like propane, and there's little green cans of propane and the white cans of propane. And we need some more tents.
We could also use, we need to get a sink put in, so we're working on making that. And I'd like to let folks know that when they bring water, it would be really cool, it would be incredibly cool, environmentally cool, if they could get large containers to bring that water so that we don't have plastic bottles everywhere.
So you're talking about like the 5-gallon, 10-gallon containers is what you could really use?
Yes.
I would like them to bring themselves and bring their, we'd like to hear from them, see what they have to say, and to meet us, and just that spirit, bring that good spirit to us, and we'll put our minds together and see what we can make for our children.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Jennifer Williamson, the Democratic Majority Leader of the Oregon House for the past 4 years, announced that she would not seek re-election. As Majority Leader, Williamson worked with an increasingly diverse and powerful caucus of Democrats and helped deliver a Democratic supermajority in the House for 2019. Williamson said, quote, "We've made our communities safer, invested in our kids, put more money in the pockets of working people, and fought hard to protect our environment." She also said that she hopes to serve the entire state of Oregon in the future. Should current Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum not run for re-election, Williamson is expected to do so. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversations. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather is increasing clouds with a low of 58 degrees. Gradual clearing tomorrow with a high of 78 degrees and decreasing wind. Today in history, Rolling Stones guitarist Brian Jones was found dead of an apparent accidental drowning in 1969. Exactly 2 years later, Doors frontman Jim Morrison died of heart failure in a Paris bathtub. Both were 27. The quote of the day is from Jim Morrison, "Expose yourself to your deepest fear. After that, fear has no power, and the fear of freedom shrinks and vanishes. You are free."
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page or by phone at 503-595-9550.
A report co-authored by ProPublica and Wired came out earlier this week detailing the use of audio monitoring equipment in public spaces and in schools. These audio monitoring devices are known as aggression detectors and are sold by a California-based company called Leroy Electronics. The so-called aggression detectors use machine learning and can record audio for later review and permanent storage. Leroy's devices detect loud or potentially aggressive volumes and pitch, but do not include VoicePrint technology, which is used to identify the speaker. Already there are concerns about whether or not this technology violates First Amendment rights by being placed in schools and public spaces. As the ACLU states, quote, "Already our public places have become blanketed by uncounted surveillance cameras, but allowing audio recording of our public lives adds a whole new layer of surveillance."
A report released Wednesday shows that ICE officials are building target lists for raids aiming to meet specific quotas. The information, garnered by several FOIA requests, was recently made public ahead of the coming 4th of July holiday, after which the Trump administration has planned a raid targeting at least 2,000 families of the, quote, millions that the president has promised to have deported. The raids and threats have become commonplace in the United States and are all part of the administration's plan to dissuade migrants from coming to the U.S. A recent report by the Department of Homeland Security quotes Border Patrol officials as stating that the child separation policy and brutal conditions in migrant detention facilities that have recently been exposed are a necessary deterrent to stem the flow of people coming across the border. If immigration officers show up at your door, U.S. law still requires that they provide a warrant signed by a judge to enter. If you have any questions about your rights, information is available through the ACLU and at www.aclu.org.
The teenage male who recorded himself raping a 16-year-old female, quote, "deserves leniency because he's from a good family," says the judge on the case. Judge James Troiano of the New Jersey Superior Court denied prosecutors' motions to try the defendant as an adult and urged prosecutors to tell the victim's family that pressing charges would, quote, "ruin the boy's life." The judge went as far as questioning the legitimacy of the rape, downplaying it as a sexual assault, even after the defendant himself called it a rape. In recent years, judges have come under fire for the ways they have handled sexual abuse cases by showing bias towards privileged teenagers.
Boston approved an organization called Super Happy Fun America's request to hold a straight pride parade this August. Its organizers are already receiving backlash in what many would consider an unconventional way. On Monday, three parade organizers discovered mysterious packages and letters addressed to their homes. The mail's content, glitter. A hazmat team went as far as shutting down one of the organizers' streets, but police reports later indicated that there was no threat to public health or safety. In a blog post, the organizers called the glitter attack, quote, "the action of domestic terrorists." Organizers say that the Straight Pride Parade is celebrating the, quote, "diversity, history, culture, and contributions of the straight community," which they called the oppressed majority.
The military doesn't want to do it. The national parks doesn't want to pay for it. But Trump's 4th of July military extravaganza will still go on, and who knows how much it will cost. Traditionally, presidents and the military have stayed away from the July 4th celebration, but Trump has put himself front and center with tanks on the ground and jets overhead. Trump's Salute to America is separate from the annual Independence Day parade, and a Capitol 4th, the annual event on the National Mall featuring musical performances. While the whole mall area is usually open to the public during the celebration, this year a large area in front of the Lincoln Memorial has been cordoned off, tickets only. White House officials say Trump's speech will not be political, provided he stays on the script, which he seldom does. Code Pink has permission to fly a baby Trump balloon outside of Trump's sightlines, but with oxygen instead of the helium it needs to fly. The last time a president spoke on the mall on the 4th of July was Richard Nixon in 1970 in a pre-recorded video, and the mall erupted in protests and tear gas.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has a tale of two 4th of Julys.
Here in Portland, we celebrate the 4th of July with a huge blues festival, low cost, benefiting statewide food banks for those in need, gathering with thousands of our friends, sharing our sorrows, dancing our asses off, with the whole thing broadcast commercial free. In D.C., Donnie will celebrate with tanks, jets, giant flags, and marching soldiers bristling with intimidation, the opposite of community. How can anyone be free with this much firepower in the hands of a man who has no friends, who is incapable of caring? Fireworks are like the yin-yang symbol, the frightening hiss of incoming rockets followed by angry booms that are erased by brilliant showers of color, releasing us from nights dark and loud, causing us to ooh and wow as one communal being. We are free to be ourselves, to be in communities of our choosing, to dispel the darkness that is never far away. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
The Navy SEAL Special Operations Chief on trial for war crimes has been acquitted of all counts but one. Edward Gallagher was facing charges of murdering a 17-year-old ISIS prisoner in 2017 by repeatedly stabbing him in the neck during his deployment in Iraq. Allegations against Gallagher came from within his own platoon, who described the chief as violent and cruel, with accusations of him shooting unarmed civilians in Iraq that included an elderly man and a school-age girl. Gallagher was convicted of taking a photo with the corpse, which he later sent over text messages saying he has a, quote, cool story, I got him with my hunting knife. Once Gallagher's platoon members turned on him, he allegedly wrote to them, quote, I thought everyone would be cool. Next time I will do it so no one sees. The jury that acquitted the defendant was made up of 7 men and 6 who have served in combat.
An airstrike hit a migrant detention center near the Libyan capital Tripoli on Wednesday, killing 44 individuals and wounding over 130. There are approximately 5,000 African migrants being held in detention centers along northwestern Libya after being denied entry into Europe from across the Mediterranean. The attack has been classified as a war crime by Libyan government officials. The United Nations said that the attack, quote, could constitute a war crime, end quote. General Khalifa Haftar, the leader of the group Libyan National Army, is believed to be responsible for the attack, although Haftar's group denies that claim. Matthew Saltmarsh, United Nations spokesman, stated, quote, refugees and migrants are paying the heaviest price in a geopolitical power struggle.
The protest that sparked Black Lives Matter chants in Israel has developed substantially, leading the parents of the slain teen to call for a pause. Demonstrations broke out after 18-year-old Solomon Tekka, an unarmed Ethiopian Israeli man, was shot and killed by an off-duty police officer while hanging out with friends in a playground. Witnesses say that the officer instigated the incident. The Ethiopian-Israeli community in Israel say they have faced systematic discrimination, racism, and a lack of empathy from authority figures in the country for decades. In the protests that have ensued, thousands have taken to the streets and blocked roads with sit-ins and burning tires. According to a police spokesperson, 111 officers have been injured and 136 people have been arrested. Solomon Tekka's family have called on protesters to wait until the end of Shiva to protest further and to refrain from violence.
Swiss insurance company Chubb announced that they will disinvest from the coal industry due to concerns over the climate. The company says it will stop issuing policies to new coal plants and will cease underwriting companies and utilities that supply electricity produced by coal. They plan to phase out all of their existing investments in coal by 2022. Chubb and its subsidiaries currently invest $2.9 billion in fossil fuels, but they will soon join a growing number of European insurers who are divesting from them, largely due to public pressure from climate activists who have been steadily raising public awareness and gaining political support.
Austria is set to become the first European Union country to ban the commonly used weed killer glyphosate. Pamela Rendi-Wagner, the leader of Austria's Social Democrats, said that the poison has immense carcinogenic effects and must be banned from the environment. Despite being classified as a, quote, probable carcinogen in 2015 by the World Health Organization in the United States and the European Union, have continued to permit widespread use of the weed killer. Glyphosate is the main ingredient in Monsanto's herbicide Roundup.
On Kyushu Island, at the southern end of Japan, 1 million residents were ordered to evacuate because of heavy rains. Multiple locations on that island received 11.8 inches of rain in one day, nearly the 12.5 inches average for the whole month of July. Some parts of Kyushu have received 39 inches of rain since Friday. From early June to late July, Japan traditionally experiences a rainy bayou season as humid air from the south meets cooler, drier air from the north. Last July, at least 200 people in Japan died after torrential rains triggered landslides and flooding. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe tweeted that an additional 14,000 from the Japanese Defense Forces have been deployed to assist emergency responders.
June 2019 is the hottest June ever, at least since 1850, when records began being kept. Some parts of Europe were 18 degrees above normal, while a Spanish wildfire appears to have resulted from a manure field getting so hot it spontaneously burst into flames. While in Alaska, around 250,000 acres have burned in the last 10 days, with nearly 120 fires still uncontained. Anchorage had higher than average temperatures nearly every day of June, with some days reaching 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
At least 43 people are dead and another 17 are still missing as heavy monsoon rains continue to pound the western Indian state of Maharashtra, which includes Mumbai. Mumbai Airport's main runway closed yesterday after an airplane skidded off it, while many roads in the city were impassable due to floodwaters. In the 24 hours ending Tuesday morning, Mumbai experienced nearly 15 inches of rain, the highest in a 24-hour period since 2005, when the city received 37 inches of rain within 24 hours. The southwest monsoon has been moving inland and expecting to reach Delhi, where recent temperatures topped 100 degrees in 2 days.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. This has been a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Alex Connor, Kenzie Beard, Dan Raphael, and Claire Risciotto.